5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Oh, you're behind me. You are behind me there. I was looking out over to Starboard. I don't know if jetties
yes, have I probably came from port, maybe. I came from port, and you were looking out to starboard.
I was looking out to starboard and the beautiful calm blue.
Yes, so it's wonderful to join you on this mill pond today.
Oh. Yes. It's an imaginary jetty and mill pond and bay, but we've somehow built it into something truly magnificent.
It's a little cove. It's a little harbour. It's a little, safe cove. Haven where we can discuss culture.
Yes, very nice. It's an old cove. A funny old cove.
Now, speaking of funny old coves...
Yes.
Sorry,
yes.
I haven't got anything to follow that up with. I just thought it was a good...
Well, speaking of funny old coves, how are you? Where are you?
Well, I'm still in Belgium. Ooh, a little bit of a story to unpack, actually. Don't know quite where to start with this because obviously this week was a very important week for me, a week I've been building towards for some time. It was essentially the day I was going to knock some heads together in a in a certain brand of sandwich shop. I can't say which. Because the work that I'm doing, as you know, is extremely hypersensitive. Very hypersensitive.
Yes.
So anyway, I got my presentation together. I was all ready. Got my ducks in a row.
Yes.
All of that.
Yes.
And I was going to go in there very early. We were opening before first sandwich, if you know what I mean. It was a sort of very early morning meeting, 6:45 a.m. Also, I'm in Belgium, so I'm an hour ahead. It's effectively 5:45 as far as, you know, my circadian rhythms are concerned. Anyway, I'm getting all ready to do it. I am literally 5 steps from the door of the shop when I get an alert on my phone.
No. Oh, no. What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The COV.
Yeah. NHS tracing app. Rewind now a period of 8 days. Okay.
Yes.
I'm at home. I'm leaving to go to Belgium. And obviously, I've got to have some sort of support system for Catamaran, my hairless cat. She wasn't born a hairless cat. She's just lost.
No, she's a quiet
She's got alopecia, basically, yeah.
Has some have hairlessness thrust upon them.
She did. And, anyway, so I've got this very clever system. Essentially, what it is, it's like, you know those systems you can get now which switches your central heating on and off remotely, and you can do it from your phone? Yes. Well, I can do the same. I've got this very sophisticated system that looks after Catamaran, so essentially she's on It turns her over, it gives her an IV drip.
Like a rotisserie?
Yeah, well...
Like a rotisserie.
Well, yes, it's the clinical equivalent of a rotisserie. I mean, I'm saying it's nothing...
The rod, I presume, doesn't go right through her. No.
No. No.
That would be, no,
not
no,
yet.
She's still... she's enough, sentient enough for that not to be an issue, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. And plenty of things do go right through her, but not the rod. So, essentially, it's there to provide nutrients. It's there to monitor blood oxygen level.
Good.
All of this stuff. And I can do it all remotely... on my phone.
Good.
There's an app and I can do it all from Belgium. I've got a little camera, I can see everything that's going on. I have got people going in from time to time, but I don't entirely trust them, Martin, and I wanted to have a sort of backup system, something that was absolutely sure I could keep a very close eye on Catamaran while I was away. Anyway, this wonderful young man called Salvador came to help me install this system. I'm pretty sure, because the timing is, it seems to be exactly right. I'm pretty sure He's the one.
Oh, Salvador. Yes. Salvador brought the cob to you.
I'm pretty sure he brought the cob. And the reason I know that is he's one of the very few people in the country to have downloaded that app. And he showed it to me on his phone when he was there. He was talking to me very proudly. He was the one that persuaded me to get it. Yes. No one else I know has gone anywhere near that app because in this age of disinformation, they all think that they're being tracked by the government. And I've got to stay here in the hotel now. I've got to isolate now for another. Well, do I have to isolate for 14 days from now, or do I? I'm very confused.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think. Out of the last 3 months, how often have you not been in the same room as a trouser press?
Yes, there is a trouser press in this room. Actually, I had noticed that. Maybe I'm catching COVID from the trouser
presses.
Yeah.
Oh, stop press.
What about you, Martin? What's been happening? What's been happening at Dunnell?
Interestingly, you'll remember that who is the addict's nephew has come over to Ludlow, where he is studying blacksmithery at the college there in Ludlow. Well, he can't go back to Romania, so what we've done is we've set him up here at Dunnell, and we've actually got a smithy. It's interesting. He works. It gets very hot in the smithy, as I suppose it must always have done, on account of the fire and the bellows and all of the rest. He toils away in a thick leather apron.
That's traditional, isn't it? That's traditional.
Of course it is. Yeah. And he sort of wears nothing underneath the apron. From the waist up. Seeing him from the back. He's bottomless as well. He literally
not so traditional.
He just parades around in nothing at all, but a thick leather apron.
Would you call it a tabard? Is it a sort of yes? How low does it go?
It goes lower than that. Oh, it goes down to a sort of ankle.
Oh,
it's almost ankle length.
It's
very long.
It's backless, like a sort of hospital
leather
gown.
Exactly, it's like a hospital gown is what it is. That whole area has sort of become his domain. Anyway, so then I'm back in the house. I nip off to the lav, and I suddenly notice that Daisy's taken out all the loo roll dispensers. Daisy, my wife, of course.
Yeah,
and she's commissioned to make some new ones. They're quite explicit.
Oh.
They're very explicit.
Oh, I understand. I think I understand your meaning.
Yes, he's made all these. I mean, they're beautifully wrought
contoured. Are they contoured, Martin?
They're contoured is exactly what they are, but they're quite priapic, I might say, if that's the thing.
That is the word, I think.
The holder for the loo roll,
yeah.
two gentleman figures facing one another with, both quite priapic.
So I mean we've got the bracket, on the wall. I mean that's coming out a little bit.
Got the bracket on the wall,
and then
two
gentlemen figures
facing
on either
one
side,
another.
Facing one another.
So yes, they're coming out sideways to the wall.
And only one of them is priapic, or they're both priapic?
No, one is priapic. The other is also priapic, but you can lift up. It's on a hinge.
Oh, so you can
get
the
right-hand one's on a hinge. So you can lift that one there, put the roll in, put it down, and Bob is your uncle. Anyway, they've appeared all over the house. Anywhere there's a loo, that's what now holds the rolls.
And your suspicion is that he's been studying from life. Is that why he's?
I don't know if he's so much studying from life, but I was going to say that sort of possibly segues into another injury. I don't know if you saw this in the news this week. This is the extraordinary discovery of 422 Duncan Grant works of erotica.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
I did see that from the Bloomsbury Group, Duncan Grant.
Yes.
From the Bloomsbury
Group. I mean,
Group.
Some of those, you kind of wish they were wearing a loo roll on their... Because that would cover a multitude of sins, wouldn't it?
So, yes, this was the story, wasn't it, that Duncan Grant, was he, the Bloomsbury Group, I mean, it worked every which way, didn't it, in the Bloomsbury Group?
Oh, Lord, yes. Oh, goodness, yes.
I mean, I think it was...
They would get in everywhere, wouldn't they?
It was very much that first, wasn't it, and art second, I think. Is that...
I think art comes a long, 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 long way down. Long, long way down. I think it's only on account of the fact that they could all draw. These are very, very, very explicit. Very, very explicit.
And the thought was that Duncan Grant had kind of had given them to a friend. I mean, this is the story of their provenance,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
Is that yes,
he gave
yes.
them to a friend that's who then right. gave them to another friend who was then thought to have destroyed them. But it turns out gave them to another friend who's been keeping them under his bed.
That's right, a theatre designer, Norman Coates, has been keeping them under his bed. I remember when I was younger, I used to keep a number of racy pictures under my bed as well. But actually, this raises a very interesting point, Craig.
Yeah.
Erotica, erotic art, erotic literature, is its purpose to be beautiful and appreciated by cold light of day with a dispassionate eye, or is its purpose to get your jollies? Just get your jollies. Is it a gilded form of pornography? Is what I'm asking.
It's a very interesting question.
What
I mean,
do you think?
Erotica seems to be what artists paint on their own time, isn't it? Basically, if someone else is paying, you know, they'll happily sort of do a portrait or whatever, or a horse standing in a field, or you know, a landscape. You know, if someone else is paying, that's what they do.
Wayne.
If they're on their own clock, they basically just draw dirty pictures. That's, I mean, and who wouldn't?
Basically,
I mean, if I could draw dirty pictures that look anywhere close to the real thing, I wouldn't leave the house, frankly. I mean, that's all I would do. So it's a testament to the work ethic of these artists that they've ever produced anything other than dirty drawings, but
in detail close-ups of other people's genitalia. You know, erotic, I've never quite known. Is it a bit like? Is it a sort of thin veil? You know, basically like dipsomaniacs being wine buffs. You know, oh my great hobby is wine. Yes. Mm. Oh, let's just smell that. Let's just smell that again. Let's just smell that again. Let's just smell that again. Let's just smell that again.
What's the matter with you? Put a smile on your face.
What's the matter with you?
Cheer up.
Enjoying Time Ghost? Why not try one of our other podcasts? Here's a small sample.
I'm Esther Coles.
And I'm Jane Horrocks.
And we'd love you to come to the allotment and meet my bees and learn about life in the hive.
Join Esther Coles and Jane Horrocks as Jane learns all about beekeeping in their new podcast, Queen Bees.
There'll be a little bit of chat, a little bit of fun,
and a little bit of filth. Come on the journey with us, please. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Podcasts?
That's what we're doing, Esther. It's a podcast.
Ooh.
Queen Bees from Hattrick Podcasts.
Anyway, what has been floating past your transom this in the last cultural Sunday?
Well, I did spot a rather interesting story actually about I don't know I haven't now this is a classic piece of Time Ghost because I haven't seen this and I'm pretty sure you haven't seen it either.
No, I won't have not.
But there's a show called Emily in Paris on Netflix. Have you heard of this show?
It's the one with Phil Collins' daughter, I think, isn't it? Little Lella Collins.
Little Lella Collins. Little Lella Collins,
I think. I think Little Lella Collins. She got the job by fax.
She got the job by fax, I have been in a room when Netflix has played it for me, if you know what I mean. You know how it does that? You know, you sort of put it on and to sort of, I presume, to sort of up its viewing figures, it just starts playing things, whether you're, you know, if you don't choose to watch something, it'll start you watching something.
Oh, that's clever.
Yes, it is. Because the viewing I don't know whether the enormous viewing figures for Emily in Paris are because people are watching it, or it's just that's what Netflix is selecting for them, if they don't select anything for themselves. Anyway,
I've been reading about it though.
Well, it's apparently a new genre. It's hate watching. It's basically
is that what
hate
it's called?
Watching? Yeah, apparently everybody hates Emily in Paris, but can't stop watching. I mean, they think it's terrible. They think it's one of the worst things they've ever seen, and they cannot stop.
They cannot get enough of it.
Yeah, they kind of get enough of it.
That is interesting, because you've got to hope that the makers of the programme don't start coming in on the joke and saying, yeah, we think it's terrible too. Yeah, we always knew it was shit. We were making this just because, you know, it's kind of performance art.
Yeah, like the Ferrero Rocher advert, yeah. Yeah, where they suddenly sort of pretended they meant all along for it to be the most tragic, hokey shit. Yes. Yes, so we meant that. Yes, we knew. We knew that people would watch this ironically. But it does beg the question, you know, because everything is analysed and counter-analysed now, of course, by the great algorithm. All hail the great algorithm. I'm writing that with a capital A. What's it called when you bow slightly? I'm bowing.
Not genuflect, but
not genuflect, but with your head.
I guess bowing. Yeah, with your head. Hedgeflect.
I'm hedgeflecting.
Neckeflect.
I'm just
netuflex.
I'm neckuflexing just a little
netuflex.
Bit. Just neckuflexing, just slightly, out of respect, because I don't want
respect.
The you
yes,
know,
well done.
I don't want that the algorithm capital T capital A coming down on me like a ton of bricks.
No.
But
no, it would be.
You know, to what extent are people really watching this? Is this a real thing? Are we going to hate? What happens when we start hate watching things? The algorithm is then going to give us more of it. I mean, we're in very frightening territory here. But I think this is really just, you know, Netflix turning into a more sort of mature platform, really, which is putting stuff in. I mean, there's a lot of very challenging stuff on Netflix to begin with, wasn't it? You engage with it, you know. There's the documentary, The Social Dilemma, we were talking about, things like The Tiger King.
Yes,
they are challenging on some level.
They encourage
you to sit forward. You know, their programs with David Attenborough. There's a whole, you know.
I don't know if you've been following the series Glow. Do you know about Glow?
I do know about Glow. Yes, I've really enjoyed it.
Oh,
I think three seasons
excellent
of Glow.
Feminine wrestling drama.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Glow, it's wonderful. I haven't watched it, but it's wonderful. It looks great. All the stuff
I've
read
about it. It really is quite good. Yes, it really is quite good. I mean, admittedly, I did start watching it because I quite wanted to watch ladies wrestling with one another.
Ladies having a fight.
I won't deny that did sort of catch my imagination. But you stayed, you know, you stayed for the drama. You stayed very much for the characters.
And it was good
drama. It was good drama. Yeah, very good.
Well, Glow, I was going to say, of course, you know, very popular, very well written. It's a very gritty and properly, well, I've no idea, I've never seen it, but it's very good from all that I gather. Has a great many fans. It's been cancelled in order to make way for more Emily in Paris, or whatever. How much, then, do you think, I mean, do you think, left to our own devices, do we turn to the easy stuff? I suppose what I want to ask, and again, how much of culture, how much of high culture is about displaying the cover of the book we are reading?
Yes.
If, for example, you're just reading on a Kindle, and you could be reading anything. You'd be reading 50 Shades of Grey, or you could be reading the excellent new Robert Harris book. Oh, excellent. V2. Oh, haven't read it, but...
it's excellent.
The adverts do look good. It's excellent. Yeah. But if you're not, you know, I wonder, though, how much... And I don't deny that a great many people come to love great culture. They come to love it. They devour it. It means a great deal to them. But I wonder how much of the sort of the early... How much of the foothills of great culture is crossed? You put the hard yards in partly because you want to display the cover of the book you are reading.
It's an interesting question. I think great culture tends to oddly sort of combine both. Take Shakespeare as perhaps a rather overworn example, but he manages to do both. You've got the bawdy jokes in there. You've got the plenty of sort of carry on of that's going to please the drunkards in the pit. You've also got
what are they called? Something
the groundlings, rules. Yes.
Groundlings.
In the pit, yes. But you've also got some fairly lofty themes in there. Things that are going to make people think a bit and You know, maybe maybe when they roll along to the Smithfield Tavern afterwards, they're going to have a little pause and think, you know,
maybe
as they hoik their breeches and adjust their ruffs, they're going to have a little take home. But you know, Shakespeare manages to do both. I think we are attracted to both. I think if we're given the choice between something that's highbrow and not entertaining, something highbrow and entertaining, and something entertaining, we will always choose the entertaining.
I think that's probably true. Yes.
with the highbrow and entertaining coming a close second, but nobody at all is interested in just highbrow, not entertaining.
Yes.
Unless they've got some form of psychiatric disorder, which is...
not out of the question.
Not out of the question.
Certainly in our old line of work.
But, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. Some people manage to do both. Most great art, I think, manages to do both. You know, look at American writers, Truman Capote, or...
David Mamet.
David Mamet, or Mark Twain. You know, these are people who wrote... Rabelaisian stories. You know, stories that Rabelaisian stories that could really... really affect the common man, you know, has great, you know, really pungent, you know, lucid themes, but were also, you know, also had a kind of cultural dignity about them. You know,
it's both. Did you ever embark on Midnight's Children, Craig?
Is that the one he wrote after Satanic Verses? Because that's the one I...
No, I think it was his second novel. Ah. I think it was before Satanic Verses, I'm going to say. I'm not entirely sure, chronologically speaking.
I did give that a go.
How far into that did you get before?
2.5 pages.
It's very well written, but... God, it's like eating a whole bucket of coal and then being told that's only halfway through chapter one. You're like, oh, God, all that coal? I've seen all the coal. And they said, you've got another chapter. Literally got that and a half to go, and then you've got to chapter two. How many chapters? 79. You're like, I'm not going to pass on this. I will read it again if I'm stuck in the middle of a... I don't know, if I'm in an Arctic weather station or something like that for 9 months, maybe I might read another couple of pages.
I do remember it was a tiny bit turgid.
Yeah, just a tiny bit. Tiny, tiny bit. I feel sorry for the door I hold open with it.
Yeah, well, I feel like while we've hit this rare level of honesty... there's a very good connection here, which is, did you read Tom Hollander's...
I knew you were going to say that. A Life in the Day.
It is brilliant. Oh, my goodness.
Of course, that was in the Sunday Times.
Yes. A newspaper of notable good taste.
Well,
didn't they give us Pick of the Week?
Everyone who works there is just so... handsome and young and
attractive
attractive,
capable.
I mean, I almost don't want to go there. I feel so unworthy next to all these absolute godlike people. Oh, I love it, because quite often, and I mean, you and I in our freelance days have probably written a fair few. I remember the Jackie Collins one I did, where you interview the subject, you interview them, and then you chat to them sort of loosely for about 40 minutes, and then you write up the article as if written by them. Tom Hollander, what he did is he actually wrote it. It's a literary piece.
It is. He has to have written it, doesn't he? He has to have actually sat down with a typewriter and written it. It is so brilliant. So tell us, just in case any of the pod people didn't happen to catch it, tell us a little bit about it.
It's basically Tom. He starts and finishes his day by lying with his girlfriend in various different positions, or if she's absent, hugging the pillow, I think he said, or hugging the duvet. I can't remember one of those things. And then in between, all kinds of things happen that I've slightly forgotten.
Well, I've got it. Funny, I've got it here in front of me.
It's
really nice. So, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, it starts, I wake up generally at 3 or 4 a.m., not because I'm like Margaret Thatcher, but because I need to pee.
I pee in the darkness, using my phone screen to illuminate the target, then often take half a sleeping pill, turn on the world service very quietly, and try to go to sleep again. And then,
you want to be careful going to the loo using your phone, the thing, because you might end up taking a photograph that
one of your friends will have to keep under their bed.
Exactly.
So then he goes there's a really nice bit about how then they sort of get up and they cook some porridge. He said, we put in such large quantities of olive oil and salt that we negate any nutritional benefits, but we enjoy it. And while it's cooking, it gives us time to look at our phones. And basically, he continues throughout his whole day with the most ruthless honesty.
Yes.
It's just fantastic.
Oh, lovely.
My favourite bit is the afternoon is time for hobbies and extracurricular activities. If it's sunny, I might go for a cycle ride down the canal. If it's raining, I might masturbate and doze, or speculate on the extraordinary injustice of Philip Green's knighthood, or look at the app that tells you which celebrity you most resemble, brackets Tom Hardy. It's brilliant, isn't it?
I think it's game-changing.
It is game-changing, isn't it?
Well, it's mould-breaking. I feel very, 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 very sorry for Ben Fogle, whoever's got this week's life in the day, because they will have done the phone call with someone like you or me and talked to them for 40 minutes, and they'll have to write something up. I mean, it's just, you've got to follow that. You've got to follow that. From now on, of course, everyone will try and be very brutally honest. He does write a very lovely diary piece. Occasionally he writes in The Spectator, old Tom Hollander. And he's written some very, very lovely little diary pieces. And they're always excoriatingly self-deprecating and always hilarious. And he sort of does something to himself. In fact, Tom writes about himself in the same way that I dare say Duncan Grant painted himself, sort of semi-priapic, after the act of quite ravaged lovemaking.
I can feel a slight breeze crossing the bay. Perhaps this is an opportune moment.
Maybe it's up time to get yourself back to... I've never even in my imagination thought where you've come from in your little vessel. But anyway, back you go.
Beyond the headland.
Beyond the horizon. I just go back to that bar there, just on the beach, where old Olbass, he's called, like the oil.
Oh,
Olbass.
Nice. What's waiting for you on the bar?
Oh, I think it's probably just a cup of tea. But maybe after that, if I choose, I might have a Negroni or something. Oh. Yes.
How very 2021.
Well, I know. Well, dahoy, dear friend.
Dahoy, dear friend. Dahoy until next time. Dahoy.
Dahoy, dahoy, dahoy.
Let me just catch my rudder there. There we go. I'm off.
There you go. Bye. Well, I'm off you go.
Dahoy.
Goodbye.
Dahoy.
Gosh, you're going fast.
Time Ghost was written and created by Alexander Armstrong and Ben Miller. It was produced by Claire Broughton and Andy Goddard. Time Ghost is a Hattrick podcast. If you want to find more podcasts by Hattrick, including The Real Sex Education and Queen Bees, just search Hattrick Podcasts on your podcast store of choice.